So I'm going to talk tonight about what I call deep belonging. And the first thing I want to say is that this word belonging, it's a very curious, an English word that we have. I don't know that it necessarily has an equivalent in other languages. The poet David White tells a funny story because he has a poem and a book of poetry called The House of Belonging. And he said at one point he was somewhere in Europe and he was giving a talk and there was a simultaneous translation. And at one point he saw the translation go by and he realized that what they had translated was House of Belongings, which is a very different house, you know.
What language was that?
I don't know. One of the Romance languages, I imagine, but I don't know. And the reason I'm calling it deep belonging is that I think many times our experience of belonging can be somewhat passive. You know, well, I feel like I belong here, or I feel like I don't belong with these people. And so deep belonging, about being a little more intentional about how we relate to this quality. So I'll start by saying that, of course, we humans are wired for connection. For much of the history of our species, we lived in tribes. And in fact, in many indigenous cultures, they live in tribes still. Recently, I was reading this beautiful book, The Spirit of Intimacy, and it's written by an indigenous African writer. And she was talking about the experience in African tribes today. And she said, for example, you know, there'll be a bunch of people living in the village and they're all kind of interconnected by family and marriage and all that. There's no words for aunt or uncle. Everyone that would be an aunt or an uncle is just another mother or father, you know? And the idea that if I'm having trouble connecting, say, with my birth mother, there would be several other mothers I could go to in that community and get care and support from. And sort of the beautiful thing and also kind of the terrifying thing of a situation like that is there's nowhere to hide. Like, everyone knows everything about you and everything is public and is discussed and all that. So, of course, there are good things and bad things about that, but it's very interesting that we live a very different kind of life now, a life where a lot of people, either individually or coupled off, live in isolation from everyone else, you know, live in an apartment where they can be apart from everyone else, you know. And, of course, the story of our culture, the lovely story is that, you know, we're born in our family and our parents love us dearly, and so we have a deep sense of belonging in our family of origin, and then we go off and we find the right person and we marry them and we create another beautiful family. We have a deep sense of connection with them. And that probably works out 2 or 3% of the time, that beautiful story. But probably Western civilization is one of the few times and places in the whole history of our species where there's been such widespread alienation, disconnection, loneliness, this sort of thing. I'm going to read a passage of poetry. It's from Mr. T.S. Eliot in the Four Quartets. We are only undeceived of that which deceiving could no longer harm. In the middle, not only the middle of the way, but all the way, in a dark wood, in a bramble, on the edge of a grim pen, where is no secure foothold, and menaced by monsters, fancy lights, risking enchantment. Do not let me hear of the wisdom of old men, but rather of their folly, their fear of fear and frenzy, their fear of possession, of belonging to another, or to others, or to God. The only wisdom we can hope to acquire is the wisdom of humility. Humility is endless. And I love those images of, you know, I think of it as, you know, for someone who has the fear of belonging, the fear of belonging to another, which is really, among other things, a fear of intimacy. then the approach to it seems like going down into this pit and there are monsters and scary lights and all that, you know. And again, I think this is one of the only times and places in history where it's been possible for it to be widespread for people to have a fear of belonging to others, a fear of intimacy, a fear of connection, a fear of the very thing that most fulfills us. I'd say in many ways the opposite of belonging, I'll move this over here, the opposite of belonging is othering. You know, certainly when we other the people that we encounter. You know, and it's worthwhile just exploring what are the various ways that you other the people you encounter. All the subtle thoughts of, you know, I'm not going to get along with that person. That person's not my kind, you know. I don't like the way that person is doing X, you know. I think in the history of religions, the one figure that I would cite as really carrying and teaching and demonstrating a profound love across all boundaries of otherness is the figure of Jesus Christ as he's presented in the Gospels. And of course, it's completely consistent with the Buddhist idea of universal compassion and similar ideas in Hinduism and Taoism. But it presented in a very dramatic way throughout the gospel narratives in the Christian tradition. And of course, the othering that causes this that is the opposite of belonging, this othering can be toward external others or it can be toward internal others. You know, all the ways that we other parts of ourselves, you know, I don't want to feel that. That's not me, you know. You know, it's worthwhile thinking, you know, how can I say, like in modern culture, if something comes up and I don't want to deal with it, no one else is going to make me deal with it, really. Like I can go, you know, go on Netflix and distract myself, or I'll, you know, lock myself in a room and drink or whatever, you know. Like, in other words, there's no, like, unless I'm already connected with people who are checking up on me, you know, it's very easy for me to hide from myself. And that wouldn't necessarily happen in a tribal community. In a tribal community, if something traumatic happened to one person, all the other people would be checking up on that person. And what are you feeling? And how is it? And they'd be held in that circle of belonging through that entire process. There's no way they could just hide and pretend that the traumatic thing never happened. You know, now that's possible in modern, you know, people can hide and pretend that something, no problem, I have no problem, you know, that sort of thing. And so it's worthwhile to think about what are the ways that you have othered in yourself, you know. And how can I say, imagine someone walked into a room and said something like, all of you here need to listen to me, and I'm going to give you permission to speak, and, you know, and you're not going to cause me any trouble. You know, like, that would be a very dictatorial way of talking. And I don't imagine many of us, like, go through life negotiating spaces like that, you know? I mean, even in my teaching career, that's not really setting up a classroom for healthy learning, you know? But that's often how we relate to our internal others, you know. And it's a very interesting question, the whole question around belonging, you know. My relation with my emotions, for example. Now, a very unhealthy relationship with my emotions if I'm just projecting them outward, you know. That person made me angry. That person upset me, you know. And not even, that's an extreme form of othering, you know. But even if I'm in touch with my emotions, I think a very common way to say it is, my emotions belong to me. You know, that sounds kind of like nonviolent communication. My emotions belong to me. Might it be more accurate to say, I belong to my emotions? You know, rather than saying my body belongs to me, might it be more accurate to say, I belong to my body? You know, it's not ego that gives rise to the body, quite the opposite. The body gives rise to ego, you know. And how does that change the orientation that we have in relating to inner otherness? And just as the, you know, all the wisdom teachings, you know, the love across boundaries of otherness, the universal compassion, these are glorious teachings, often traditionally held toward external others, but they equally hold toward internal others. And really, the more that we can love within, the more we create a kind of inner belonging, a deep belonging, which itself is magnetic, which itself, you know, if I'm walking around in deep belonging, it's an invitation to others around me to belong as well. You know, it's in so many ways, the greatest gift I can give the world is to love myself genuinely. So I'm going to read a couple more pieces of poetry here. This also from the Four Quartets. We shall not cease from exploring, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. You know, and this idea of the end of exploring as this kind of deep remembering of who we really are in our core, and a deep kind of inner homecoming. And similarly, from E.E. Cummings, and this is my favorite E.E. Cummings poem. Love is a place, and through this place of love move with brightness of peace, all places. Yes is a world, and in this world of yes live, skillfully curled, all worlds. And just that space of, you know, this is ultimately what Zen is after, this just complete acceptance of everything that is in the external world, everything that is in the internal world. And just sort of relaxing into the suchness of everything that is. And I suppose the final thing I'll say, and in my own life, you know, as I become more centered, as I become more quiet, I become aware that it's as if we're all surrounded by love. You could call it the universal love, the universal healing, you know, you could attach all kinds of religious names to it. But the ground of the universe is in some ways the hidden ground of love. And in some sense, the deepest sense of belonging happens in connecting to that. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. First, I'll share it with the Zoomies. Thank you. So I have the three poems at the top. From St. Bonaventura, he was a Franciscan theologian. He lived at the same time as Thomas Aquinas. And he said, "Enter yourself, therefore, and know that your soul loves itself most fervently." And it's kind of a radical thing to say even in 2021. It was a very radical thing to say in the 13th century. But just this idea that the deepest core part of us loves us so dearly and loves itself so dearly. Montaigne, the great essayist, said, "The greatest thing in the world is to know how to belong to ourselves." The poet Rabindranath Tagore says, "Everything comes to us that belongs to us if we create the capacity to receive it." You know, and that's a fascinating question also. In what way have you not created the capacity to receive what truly belongs to you. Alfred Adler says quite clearly, my difficulties belong to me. Amen. And I love this one from Groucho Marx. Please accept my resignation. I don't care to belong to any club that will have me as a member. which is really funny, but it's kind of speaks something deep about a lot about human relationships. C.S. Lewis says, humans are amphibian, half spirit and half animal. As spirits, they belong to the eternal world, but as animals, they inhabit time. William Glasser says, we're driven by five genetic needs: survival, love and belonging, power, freedom, and fun. It's a great list there. Cesar Chavez said, when we are really honest with ourselves, we must admit our lives are all that really belong to us. So it is how we use our lives that determine the kind of men we are, or the kind of people we are. Elizabeth Lowell said, some of us aren't meant to belong. Some of us have to turn the world upside down and shake the hell out of it to make our own place in it. And I think it's very true that there are a lot of people, and probably many people in Berkeley in particular, who didn't fit with the very conventional picture of the world and had to kind of wrestle with it to create their own experience. Sarah Van Breathnet says, it doesn't matter whom you love or where you moved from or to, you always take yourself with you. If you don't know who you are, or if you've forgotten or misplaced her, then you'll always feel as if you don't belong anywhere. And it's really like the long lost love is always ourself, you know? Bell Hooks, that amazing woman, says, a generous heart is always open, always ready to receive our going and coming. In the midst of such love, we need never fear abandonment. This is the most precious gift true love offers, the experience of knowing we always belong. Tara Brach, another extraordinary woman, says, with an undefended heart, we can fall in love with life over and over every day. We become a child of wonder, grateful to be walking the earth, grateful to belong with one another and to all creation. We find our true refuge in every moment, in every breath. We are happy for no reason. And I really like what she presents. Gratefulness, it's such a magical quality. I mean, it makes anyone happier to practice gratefulness. And it also is, in some ways, something that facilitates deep belonging. David White said, there's a massive kind of radical simplification into what we call the soul, which is really the faculty of intimate belonging inside every human being. And I love that formulation, and it really, I like reading it in connection with the first one from Bonaventura, the soul loves itself most fervently. John O'Donohue, who is David White's friend, says, solitude is one of the most precious things in human life. It is different from loneliness. When you're lonely, you become acutely conscious of your own separation. Solitude can be a homecoming to your own deepest belonging. A couple from Brené Brown, who has a lot to say about this. Brené Brown says, a deep sense of love and belonging is an irreducible need of all people. We are biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love, to be loved, and to belong. When these needs are not met, we don't function as we are meant to. We break, we fall apart, we numb, we ache, we hurt others, we get sick. She also said, owning our story can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it. Embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous on giving up in love and belonging and joy, experiences that make us the most vulnerable. Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness, we will discover the infinite power of our light. Jhumpa Lahiri says, the essence of my life is between a deep desire to belong and my suspicion of belonging. So a very poignant expression of this modern Western kind of experience. And then finally, Grace Mamenikin just says simply, each of us can build our own capacity for genuine belonging.